You know, I've been hearing about this ceramic cow for ages, but this is my first visit with a ceramic cow. This is very exciting. Arugula.
Okay.
Oh, and what happens? I get really excited and 89 pears come into my head. Lemon. Lemon and arugula is amazing. That beautiful, that sort of peppery spiciness of arugula. And you need both parts of the lemon juice and the lemon peel.
Okay. So you're zesting the lemon.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Or actually probably what I would do especially if we're doing something raw with arugula is to strip the zest instead of grate it with a microplane. So you've actually got a big piece of lemon that's got sort of that bitterness also, as well as the flavor of the lemon, which sort of ties into that spicy bitterness of the arugula. So those two, that pair of bitterness sort of sits next to each other on your palate, but they don't try to be on the same place on your palate. They make this beautiful sort of companion set. And then you throw the acid from the lemon juice on top of that with a little bit of olive oil to sort of carry that acid around.
Okay.
And that's, you know, sort of really simple and a basis then for sort of throwing other things, you know, into the bowl. You know, some sun-dried tomatoes would be wonderful. Some Parmigiano Reggiano would be wonderful. Some freshly cracked black pepper. You know, if you eat animal protein, some really crispy pancetta or some crispy local bacon would be really great as well.
So, but arugula is something – I feel like I've had it recently as served wilted underneath a steak.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So it's sort of and it has that double life, you know, of being able to be a really interesting salad green cold dish ingredient, but then when you add heat to it and either wilt it or saute it or roast it in a really hot oven really quickly, then you get either sort of a condiment potential or a side dish potential. It's great. So sort of simply wilted, you know, and either folded into really softly scrambled eggs, you know, in the French style or stuffed into an omelet or used inside of a quiche. Served, as you were suggesting, sort of sautéed under, you know, under a steak as we have seen spinach, you know, done a lot. The interesting thing that happens when you heat the arugula is the complexity of the bitterness and the heat softens and diminishes, actually. So it becomes a less complex flavor on your palate, which perhaps moves it sort of from center stage, as we were talking about having it in a simple salad, you know, to moving it towards being a companion.
I like it. Okay. Let's go for second ingredient from the ceramic cow. What do we have?
Beets. I think that maybe you read my mind before you started putting things okay. in the cow, because beets are also one of my favorite things in the whole world.
Stain your hands, though.
They do. They do. So I actually often will wear plastic gloves when I'm working with beets, because if I don't want to be pink, you know, later mm-hmm. in the day. And there are three things that I always think of when thinking about beets. And the first pair is beets in a really slow oven.
So we're roasting them.
We're roasting them in a covered dish somehow, whether it's in a foil pack or in a Dutch oven, because I like beets best when they are really long cooked, so that all of the sugars, all the carbohydrates in there, you know, turn to sugar and they develop this unbelievably complex set of sweet flavors. Then it's time to make a choice. And the choice is either cardamom or tarragon.
Okay.
And a little bit of cardamom when you put them in the Dutch oven or in the foil pack, so that the flavor and the aroma, you know, is all in there, so it saturates. The beautiful thing about cardamom, I think, is that it is a flavor that's amazing and complex. It is an aroma that is amazing and complex, and the two are different. And so it is one of the best examples of being able to eat with your nose and your mouth, you know, at the same time, and combining those two senses. Its aroma is so strong and maintains itself through the cooking process that you get to enjoy both of those layers of experience.
Okay. So we've had arugula and lemon, beets and cardamom.
Yes.
Let's see what our third.
Let's mix it around in here. Let's see if there's some sugar or something in here.
What is it?
I got more than
what one. What is it?
Oh, kale.
We've got another green, but one of my favorites.
Oh, my gosh, kale. I know. I keep saying that everything is my favorite, but, I mean, we seriously have put three of my top 10 favorite things on the table.
Okay.
You know, today.
It's another green. We've already talked about arugula, but kale is – I mean, I love kale.
I love kale. And to me, kale is different than arugula. Kale is tough. And one of my favorite things to do with it that's sort of unusual for our kitchen is to actually make a pesto out of it or make a puree.
So instead of basil?
Instead of basil.
Okay.
You know, basil's a summer thing and makes really beautiful pesto, you know, in the summer. You know, but the idea of basil pesto in October or November or December or January is a little weird because it's not a seasonal thing, you know, for here.
So a kale pesto, we're pairing it then with the same olive oil and pine nuts?
Pine nuts or it's one where walnuts is actually a really good substitute because they have a slightly stronger flavor, and serve it on top of a puree of lima beans or navy beans or cannellini beans or something that they were using as a side dish in place of mashed potatoes. And for me, I don't personally eat a lot of meat, and so I will often have, you know, one of those bean purees with the grain, you know, with the grain, warm grain salad, to complete, you know, a vegetarian protein, you know, set.
Well, I have a question, and it's something I recently tried at BHK Cafe a couple of weeks ago, and it's your lavender latte. So a lavender syrup.
Isn't that crazy?
And I tried it in an iced latte, and it was really good. It was an afternoon, you know, my afternoon pick-me-up. I decided to go to BHK and get a lavender latte.
I love it.
So tell me about lavender in a coffee.
Well,
your lavender syrup.
I was going to say, let's talk about lavender first, and then we'll talk about pairing it, because there are some really magical pairings with lavender as well. Lavender is another one of those things like cardamom that is both a fragrance and aroma and a flavor, and they're each different, and they combine together sort of on your palate. We do our lavender syrup in-house. It's just a simple, basic, simple syrup of sugar and water, and then we throw the lavender blossoms in them and let it steep and strain it out to get that base. The beautiful thing about the flavor of lavender is that it has those really, really high pitched sort of citrusy, you know, aromatic notes that register both in your nose and on your palate, but really high, almost up inside your head.
Okay.
And then there are some really dark, earthy, grassy notes that register really, really low, you know, on your palate, almost down in your upper chest. And there's this little tiny line of flavor, so that sort of connects those together. But what that sort of roof and foundation do then is allow for other flavors to be suspended, you know, in between them. And depending on how dense those middle flavors are, that determines how strongly the lavender dominates the pairing. So if you put it with something that's really intense like espresso, which is really powerful and really sort of sharp and acidic, but also deep and dark, that we get this sort of long vertical flavor that goes all the way from inside your head down into your chest. The other really magical, since we're sort of on the cusp of talking about sugar and we haven't talked about sugar yet, is lavender and chocolate.
Okay.
The crazy thing about the way the flavor works is that you put it on you don't get the aroma of the chocolate of the lavender in the chocolate. It somehow gets encapsulated in it. But when the flavor of the lavender registers on your palate, which is after the chocolate registers, then you smell lavender. And it happens when you breathe across your palate. That's when the lavender registers. So you put that big lavender truffle, you know, sort of in your mouth, and you get the cocoa, the bitterness from the cocoa powder, and that diminishes, and you get that creamy density of the chocolate, you know, on your palate. And then something else starts to register, and you swallow, and then you breathe across your palate, and then all of a sudden your eyes open up really wide and your ears tingle because your whole head is full of lavender. But as a fragrance, even though
it comes back to, yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so it's an incredible sort of physical sensation experience of a food pairing.
Well, thank you, David.
You're welcome.
I think we've successfully covered food pairing. What do you think? I think we could talk all day.
We could. I would love that.
Thank you.